This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you, Keith, for the news. My name is Rich Bradbury. This is, of course, Enterprise BizBytes. We are going to be with you all the way through until 1 o'clock. I am joined in the studio by...
Audrey Raj.
Aravindya Baraj.
These two are with me all the way through. Don't go anywhere, folks. If you want to get in touch with our show, get us on Twitter. We are at BFM Radio. Or, of course, on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. You see, Audrey, I finished the whole thing this time.
Very nice. Mm.
Right? Last time, apparently, I went 018-789 and then stopped, right? 018-789-8899. Right. Stories for today. It's midweek, of course. We're getting through the hump. AirAsia and Uber are partnering up, so now everybody can ride.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just said that.
I did just say that, yeah. Facebook is making a virtual comeback in China. VR children's books combine print with self-directed action. Does that mean choose your own adventure in VR?
Yes.
Awesome. Plastic microbeads have finally entered... the ban has entered the force, in the UK. And finally, repair rather than dispose of your gadgets, mm-hmm. right? My dad always said there was two things that you can't fix: a broken heart and a broken heart and the crack of dawn. There you go. The only two things you can't fix, right?
Wow.
Nice. Wisdom, yeah. Wisdom from the ages. Right, yeah. Anyway, moving on.
And maybe Apple's batteries.
And maybe Apple's batteries. Although they said that they might gonna start replacing them for free.
For free?
Don't quote me on that, because we know what Apple are like. Right. So, travellers will now be able to book their rides to the airport a month ahead following a partnership between AirAsia and Uber. The low-cost carrier and rideshare service will be working together in 52 cities in 16 markets across Asia-Pacific and the US, where AirAsia operates and the Uber app is available. According to a press release, you'll be able to request or schedule rides up to 30 days in advance when confirming booking or checking in for AirAsia flights via web or mobile. Woo! Mm. So new Uber users also get a free discounted rides if they enter a certain code when you register with your account. So they said they're working together that could provide a service that allowed customers to request their Uber ride to airport in step with their itinerary and have the Uber driver waiting for them when their flight lands. Great idea.
Yeah. This is great. And I know what it's like for Uber drivers when they get a trip to the airport.
Oh, yes.
Because then they have to get in line to get a trip back. And sometimes you are number 182. You
right.
are number 72 on the list. And that all these Uber drivers are just lined up by the airport just waiting to get back. So this way, if you're going to make it to the airport, you know you maybe most of the time you'll have a ride back.
Well, there's one thing, right? At least you'll be there on time for your flight. Doesn't necessarily mean your flight will be leaving on time, though.
Ah,
yeah,
right.
Yep.
I see what I did. I'm just being a bit cheeky.
No, but it's true. If you get like flight delays, then so how does that work? So if you get flight delays, does your booking still stand?
That's a very good question.
What if you're delayed for about 2 hours and then you land like 2 hours late? Does the Uber driver still wait for you, or does he
with his meter ticking over?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't be too surprised.
Yeah, or does he lose business because he's not picking other people up? Yeah,
good question.
I mean, one of the issues that I know some Uber driver have, what they have is that they don't know that they're going to the airport.
Right.
They know that it's a long distance drive, but they don't know that they're going to the airport. And what if you're driving a Viva or a Myvi and you can't actually take the load of, I don't know, two suitcases?
Right.
What happens then?
Yeah.
So this way, I guess, hopefully they'll be prepared for it, you know, if they're working together with AirAsia.
But as a smart consumer, when you're booking your Uber ride, if you've got a big suitcase, it's probably wise to say to get a bigger car, right, instead of just a Myvi. I mean, I've encountered that problem before, I'll be honest.
Yeah, but not everybody thinks that way.
Right,
they just assume that a nice car is going to come with plenty of boot space.
Yeah, but that's another thing, right? Because Uber they don't know where they're going. It's not like Grab. So Grab drivers know where they're going to go and Uber doesn't know where they're going to go. Oh, okay. So that makes even more sense. So now they know they have to go to the airport because they have this booking thing with AirAsia and stuff. Yep. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Good idea, though. But yeah, like you say, there's a few issues that we need to kind of iron out, I assume, first. There'll probably be something in the press release, I guess.
I guess. But if they're working with the airline company, then they should know when the airline's getting delayed and stuff. I guess. So if it's like a two-hour delay, then they just get there late. I don't know. I don't know how they're implementing this in their app.
We don't know yet.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. Audrey.
Yes.
Facebook is making a virtual comeback in China. You see, that's why I'm confusing words this morning.
Yeah, so Facebook has announced that it will join with smartphone company Xiaomi Corp to launch a new VR headset called the Mi VR Standalone. And this is modeled after Facebook's Oculus Go.
This is after we spoke about how yesterday Xiaomi were looking, they're basically feeding the market, saying that the IPO is going to be around $200 billion?
Mm.
Some ridiculous amount of money.
Yes, it's supposed to be one of the biggest after Alibaba, right?
Yeah.
So this move is seen by some analysts as a means for, well, Facebook to secure a perch in a country where, you know, the social networking business has long been blocked. I mean, this has been going on since the year 2009. So teaming up with Xiaomi on a consumer hardware device, it's unlikely to raise some concerns that the Chinese government had over Facebook content. And it will also, well, give Facebook a chance to tap both Chinese consumers and the country's manufacturing prowess. It's not just about Facebook getting into China. It's really a solid business opportunity for Facebook, if you think about it. So shipments of VR headsets in China grew something like 87% last year. And in the US, it only grew about 11%. So there were about 1.1 million units that were shipped to China last year. And by 2021, shipments of such headsets to the country are expected to reach like 12 million or more. So Xiaomi already makes its own VR headsets, but it's a different kind than the standalone device that, that it's working with Facebook on. And even though China's hardware makers have recently brought down the prices of VR headsets, there's a lot of technical improvements. The headsets are left wanting. So the cheaper headsets might not have advanced features, so it hurts consumer experience and it limits adoption. So this is where, I guess, Facebook comes in, and, you know, it just it provides the right content and works on this. And hopefully at, medium-costing headset, but I know with good content.
Do we know what kind adoption. Of, do we know what kind of content they're providing yet?
No word on that just yet.
All right.
Yeah, that's one thing. Now, is we thought, like, I think in 2016, we thought last year headsets were going to take off and then they were going to become mainstream, and then it didn't happen. I think they wanted it to happen in 2016 and then it didn't happen. 2017, it didn't happen, and then they're still trying to make it happen.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that was supposed to get into the market and we're supposed to be all using VR headsets, but we still haven't gotten there yet, even though the technology is there. PlayStation VR is amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, if Facebook can do it, because they have like the mainstream platform, and if they can, like, you know, let the public subscribe to it openly and easily, then it might finally take off, and then we might finally get it in the...
It's kind of a double-edged sword, because referring back to what you were saying about the PlayStation headset, it is brilliant. The problem is that there's not an awful lot of product for it.
Yeah.
And so because of that, you know, there's less adoption, and because there's less adoption, there's less people willing to develop for it, and vice versa. I mean, I've used it, I've tried it, and I really enjoyed it, but it made me motion sick.
Yeah, same. Yeah,
And I think that's a kind of barrier to a lot of people as well. But apparently, the more you play it, the less chance you have of getting...
You get used to it.
Yeah, you get used to it. But if you're using it for the first time and it's kind of spacing you out a little bit, it's not going to encourage you to want to try it out anymore, is it, I guess?
Yeah, it's like a theme park ride kind of thing. You do it once, but then you don't want to get on the ride anytime in the next week or the next month, at least.
Have you not tried it, Audrey?
I have not, actually, but I actually watched Arvin try it for the first time. That was fun, too, just watching you.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to, like, wobble and hold onto the table and stuff because I was afraid of falling like an idiot.
Brilliant. Right, time for a short break. We've got some music coming up from The Hives with Go Right Ahead. When we come back, more VR children's books. They're combining print with self-directed action. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. Ladies and gents, if you're only just joining us, you've missed a couple of stories so far. We had a story about how AirAsia are teaming up with Uber to get you to your flight on time. We then spoke about how Facebook are making a virtual comeback into China. Moving on to more virtual reality, VR children's books are combining print with self-directed action. This sounds a lot of fun.
Yes. So among the exhibitors at the CES in Las Vegas last week was the publisher of a new VR book series for kids, who basically basically demonstrated what the next generation of storytelling could look like. So the publisher, Quantum Story Company, launched its kids book called, it's a series, it's called Operation You, and it offers something called self-directed action, which combines traditional print with AR, augmented reality, and VR technologies. So basically it's a printed book, and as a reader turns the page of the printed book, Ray, the major character in the series, invites them to download the free app on Android or iOS, and then use the included VR goggles in order to be taken into the story. So now once inside, they experience everything that happens in the first person. So they might have to dodge a snowball, or they might have to find a seat on the bus. So it's actually what they want to do. And the first Operation U book is called Morning Nightmare. It depicts the difficulties and pressures kids experience when boarding the school bus. It's a simple thing, but you know, when you're a kid, it could be a nightmare, right? So the series was launched with the goal of encouraging reading in a world of distraction. It's to get kids to read in ways that are native to them, because kids today, you know, they read stuff on television or on their tablets or, you know, on their phones. I mean, that's how reading is to them. They didn't grow up, like, reading books, only books, like we did. Okay, I'm not looking at Arvin, but like, like we did, Rich, you know, so... So for them,
he's not that much younger, you know. To clarify.
What are books?
What are books?
What's paper?
They're those things made out of leaves, you know. Flick through
printers.
Yeah, leaves. Oh. Yeah.
So, I mean, coming back to this, so this is a way that... It gets kids reading in ways that are native to them. And the company claims that the books help kids build skills in a safe virtual environment that they can use when they're out in the real world. So I like this idea. You know, I used to enjoy those books where it gave you different alternatives and you can write your own story. And you can go back and read the book again and then just do it a different
way. Totally different. Yeah. I mean, this is what I was going to say. Centuries ago, Arvin, when I was reading my own books, Choose Your Own Adventure, one of the first ones I picked up was it was The Warlock of Firetop Mountain, right? And it written by two guys, Steve Jackson and Ian Livingston. In fact, Steve Jackson was here in the office a few years ago. And he was the guy, him and the other guy, that made me realize that books were more than just a story. You know, it was something completely different where you could literally choose where you wanted to go by the roll of a dice or one thing or another. So I can imagine something like that being in VR and AR, and that would absolutely have my attention 100%. You know, if I'm choosing, do you want to go down this corridor or do you want to turn right? You know, and if that's in VR, that would be incredible.
And I think if with like kids' books like this, right, it actually teaches you consequences of your actions. Yeah. So that's a good thing. And this is the publisher is calling this the world's first virtual reality book series, but it joins a number of other books already in the market. Peronio was launched in 2016. It's an interactive pop-up book for mobile devices that tells the story of a boy who can't decide what he wants to be when he grows up. And then there's also Tara's Locket, a VR storybook that's from a London-based design studio. That was launched last year and allows kids to step inside a hand-illustrated world as they guide the young girl, Tara, through a magical landscape to reunite with her parents. So, interesting stuff.
Wonderful stuff.
So how do they see the VR stuff with their phone?
No, it's actually all on... I guess it's on the book, because it says it's a printed book that, and then you put on the VR goggles and then you make your decisions that way, I guess.
Because before this, they used to have the, if you bought like these playing cards or like these, let's say like a stack of cards about dinosaurs. So you open the cards, you put them on the table and then you use your, I think it was called Octo or some company from Indonesia. You use your phone or your tablet and then you, when you aim it at the card, you see like dinosaurs pop up and move around.
You did? When was this?
Yeah. No, it was, what? 2 years ago? No, a year ago. Last year.
We did a story on this on BizBytes.
Yeah. So they were at the. They used to be at the Curve. You know the weekend bazaar things.
Right.
So they used to be there, and then they used to demonstrate it. So you can take like, let's say a card with bananas, and then you take another card with the monkey, and when you put both the cards together, the monkey from the monkey card gets up and goes to the banana card, and then eats the bananas. in VR. Just through your
genius.
Phone. Yeah, just through your phone or your tablet. But then when you move the tablet, you can turn it off and it's nothing. So for kids, it's amazing. So I was wondering if they're using their tabs for this or they have to put on like the headset or whatever. Yeah. But any kind of enhancement to reading is nice. I remember like when I was a kid, there was this book about a T-Rex or something that came with a CD. So you put the CD in and then it has all like the sound effects of the volcanoes and the storms and then like the T-Rex reads to you. You can hear it like raw. You have to go with the book and the CD, so you get all these sound effects and it sounds like a movie while you're reading it at the same time.
Brilliant.
See what I meant, you know? He's from a different generation.
Different generation,
my
right?
books didn't come with CDs.
No, mine neither.
Not even with a cassette tape.
Mine did come with a soundtrack, but it was like, Richard! Something like that, you know. A lot less exciting than volcanoes erupting.
Natural.
Natural sounds. All right. Good stuff. I really like the idea of this. Right. If you want to get in touch, let us know on Twitter. We are at BFM Radio. Or, of course, we are on WhatsApp. 018-789-8899. Do not go anywhere. Music coming up. It is the Kings of Leon, Sex on Fire, right here on BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio by
Arvind Yabaraj
and Audrey Raj.
We're with you all the way through until 1 o'clock. Now, you may have remembered that if you're a regular listener, of course, we did a story not too long ago about how the UK were discussing whether or not microbeads should be allowed into products across the UK. They've now saying that there is going to be a manufacturing ban. So they can no longer be used in cosmetics and personal care products in the UK. After a long-promised ban came into effect on Tuesday, the ban initially bars the manufacture of such products, and a ban on sales will follow in July. So thousands of tons of plastic microbeads from products such as exfoliating face scrubs and toothpaste wash into the sea every year, where they harm wildlife and can ultimately be eaten by people. You think about that? So one minute it's scrubbing my face, and the next minute you're stuffing it in your face.
Yes, via the marine life.
Yeah, not nice. You've got some stats for you. Go on.
Yes, so, you know,
scare me.
How big is this? What is the scale of plastic pollution in our oceans, right? So apparently each year more than 8 million tons of plastic ends up in the ocean, wreaking havoc on, marine life, fisheries, and of course tourism. Mm. So this costs about, $8 billion every year in damage to the marine ecosystem. And up to 80% of all the litter in the ocean is actually plastic. And at the current rate that we are, dumping plastic into the ocean, right? By 2050, there would be more plastic than fish in the ocean, and 99% of seabirds would have ingested some kind of plastic. This is by the year 2050. So this is really serious, guys.
Yeah.
Like $8 billion in damage.
I mean, the UK now, they're looking at action on plastic bottles. A million are bought every minute around the world, and they make up a third of the plastic litter in the sea. In December, the UK's Environmental Audit Committee of MPs called for a deposit return scheme, which has successfully increased recycling rates in some countries. It was only yesterday we were talking, Majida was mentioning about a borough of London that has started charging an extra fee for people who buy paper cups from a certain coffee joint. Mm-hmm. And then back in 2015, the UK introduced the 5p charge on plastic carrier bags. Now, I was talking yesterday about how it hasn't really made that much of a difference here, I don't think. But in the UK, it's now seen 9 billion fewer plastic bags being used.
So the thing is that everyone's talking about plastic bottles and plastic bags and paper cups and things like that. But these little microbeads, they're really small, but they play such a significant role in the ocean's pollution. Why? Because the fishes and the sea life, they basically mistake them for fish eggs and then they ingest them. And these microbeads, they act like sponges and they actually absorb chemicals, pesticides. And so what it does is when the fish ingest them, then it's in the fish's system. And then when you ingest the fish, that's how we end up sick as well.
Yeah.
Just coming back to you again and again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Circle of life.
Circle of life. The microbeads, so we tested one just now, but some of them dissolve.
Correct.
So they're made of vegetable oils. So
some kind of cellulose.
Some kind of cellulose. So
microcrystalline cellulose.
There you go.
Yeah.
So those are fine. So yeah. if products that use those things, that's not a problem, right? Like
right.
because we
yeah.
find them in what those scrubs, body scrubs.
Correct. Correct.
So these disintegrate. The ones from Richard's hand sanitizer, fancy hand sanitizer. Okay. So those disintegrate because you know once you're done with them, you don't see them anymore. But this ban affects all the rinse off microbeads from your cosmetics, like the ones that you put in your toothpaste and in your face scrubs. You know.
Oh.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, these microbeads are completely unnecessary if you think about it. Why do you need it in your toothpaste? I mean, what's wrong with, like, regular toothpaste? And also, there are so many natural alternatives to these microbeads.
Salt, sugar,
rolled oats, jojoba beads, and, of course, coffee. Coffee is a great exfoliant. So, I mean, why not, well...
Yeah,
I mean, this doesn't make sense.
The interesting thing, though, is whether or not we're going to see a big reaction from some of the cosmetic companies. You know, whether or not how it's going to affect sales in other parts of the world or not, especially when the ban comes in July.
Yeah.
That's going to make a real big difference.
Yeah.
But this is July 2018. The US has already put this ban in place in 2015?
Yeah.
Okay. So they are late to the.
So they're doing this piecemeal.
Bits and pieces. Yeah. Beads by beads. Right. Time for some. Sorry. I don't know what's wrong with me today. Time to take a break. I need a break. Music coming up. The Mighty Mighty Boss Tones with The Impression That I Get. And when we get back, Arvin will be telling us you should be repairing rather than disposing of your gadgets. Apple, I hope you're listening. You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 80. 89.9.
Bigotry Free Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. It's almost time for us to wrap up for the day, but we do have one more story. Instead of discarding your faulty gadgets, fix them yourself by attending the free khaki repair workshops. Tell me more, Arvin.
Yeah, so there are these workshops by Khaki DIY. It is their program. They call it Khaki Repair. It's an initiative by Khaki DIY founder Johnson Lam, and he hosts the workshops at Garage KL. I think that's a cafe in Ampang, and Jaya One in PJ. So it's a one-day class that brings together people with damaged items and those from the DIY community, and it gets them together to work to fix these devices by exchanging ideas and learning from each other and all
that
stuff.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Yeah, and it's free. It's completely free. It happens once every 2 weeks, I think. He says that the attendees can expect to meet members of the DIY communities and learn about basic electronics and how to work with household tools like soldering irons, wire cutters, screwdrivers, wrenches. All the tools will be provided by Khaki DIY on the day itself as well.
Right.
Yeah. The program runs for about 4 hours a day and is held every 2 weeks, and they switch between the space in Garage and Jaya One. Lam also says that the most common things brought for fixing are laptop adapters, especially the ones for MacBooks, plus zippers for backpacks and even ovens. Yeah, so those kinds of things. He even says that some people bring in stuff like toilet flushers, just basic household things. It's not all about electronics.
Yeah. I've had an issue with my toilet for a while, and I've fixed it numerous times.
Yeah.
But I don't want to name names, but we have a colleague here that would call out an electrician whenever they needed to change a light bulb.
No.
Yes.
A light bulb.
But you know, so but when people are like that, you know that some people could do with attending some of these classes. Just to learn, you know.
I don't think he's going to teach people how to fix light bulbs, but he might go a couple of steps further.
I like what he said. I mean, there's this quote here, right, by the Khaki DIY founder. He says, "Yes, most electronics these days will spoil right after their warranty expires. I think it's planned that way to boost the economy and stuff like that."
Yeah, and stuff like that. So, no, he has his own view. He says that we shouldn't give into to the trend of consumerism.
Right.
And,
he's right.
I forgot that word that you used just now.
Planned obsolescence.
Planned obsolescence.
Yes.
Yeah. So we shouldn't give in to planned obsolescence, and we shouldn't give in to consumerism. And if we have something that can be used for something else, then we should attend to it. Some of the examples are like using old toilet. What do you call that? Not the sink.
The flushing tank.
The flushing tank. Mm. Using that and a couple of light bulbs to have like indoor to grow like organic plants indoors and stuff.
That's a smart idea.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. And you know, if you're a hipster, these things come naturally. You just use old things and old
upcycle. Old, I think
yeah,
is
yeah,
the term.
Upcycle
the
and
term
also
use, right.
Yeah. You use old things that other people don't want.
Right.
And then make them into like a cafe decoration or something.
Yeah.
You know, he breaks the courses into three parts. So he says that step one is to inspire people to fix things and enhance the skills for getting things mended. Step two, encourage problem solving by upcycling things that cannot be fixed, finding new uses for junk or even modifying it to be something else. Step three, innovate by using existing resources to invent something new. For example, the thing that I said, the old toilet flushing tank can be used to grow plants. The logic behind the workshop is that a basic understanding of how things work is good enough, because he says that even the professionals pick up skills from YouTube.
Right.
So once you know how basic electronics work, or how a basic, even coming back to the flush, how that mechanism works, you can pretty much repair anything after that.
This is true.
And I'm just looking down this article. These guys are going on TV too, huh?
Mm. Yeah. They are planning a 13-episode series on RTM that would teach viewers about upcycling junk, doing mini projects using household things, and giving tips on being eco-friendly as well.
There is an entire TV industry based on this idea in the UK, where people go to junk shops, they buy whatever they find, and they make something out of it, and then they sell it to those hipsters that you mentioned, for thousands of pounds.
Yeah.
You know, so they will buy old chairs that somebody was going to throw away. They'll repaint them. They'll recover them. You know, and it costs them nothing. And they're selling them for like 250, 300 ringgit.
Vintage,
you know,
signboards and posters.
That kind of stuff. Yeah. They've always got a market, you know.
Yeah. I mean, the interior deco nowadays when you go is, it's like that. Everything now is, what did they call that? Cement-colored floors and industrial design.
You know,
using old things and all that. So I think doing something like mending your own stuff and making workable things can work. My favorite part of this whole thing is that moving forward, they will also be reaching out to more people using something called the Maker Van, which is a moving workshop on wheels.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Nice.
So it's like a food truck, but he goes around from like neighborhood to neighborhood. And if you need something repaired, then he just opens up the back of the van, and then he has all the tools to, like, you know.
Hello, sir. How can I help you today?
Yeah.
Like the old, like it used to happen like years ago.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. We had that, what was it called? The Rag and Bone Man, they used to be called in the UK. Aww. They'd come around and they'd take your junk, and if they could fix something for you, they'd fix it for you there and then. If they couldn't, they'd take it off your hands.
Nice.
Yeah. It'd be nice for the kids to watch this happening, well, right? And they can learn to fix their own stuff.
Right, and this is how I was raised. You don't throw anything away. You know, if you can fix it, you fix it. If you can't, somebody else can. That's how, you know, we were kind of brought up and raised. But then, as this guy is saying, you know, consumerism kind of came in and took over everything. Mm-hmm. And now we're all falling into that trap, aren't we?
Yeah, I think the biggest problem locally is that even if you want to buy spare parts, it's expensive.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I know that I was talking to you about this, I think, a few months ago, and you said that back home you do something very DIY in the UK, because you could get these things for cheap.
Yeah.
But here, I think other than Mr. DIY,
Ace Hardware.
Yeah, it's expensive.
Super expensive.
Yeah, even if you get your things, even your basic items like nuts and bolts to fix something, it's expensive.
It is. And the people in the stores don't know what they're talking about or where the stuff is located.
Which is even
more frustrating.
Yeah.
You know? So, especially when they don't speak English as well. So I get in them like, hey, where's this particular bolt? And he's like, don't know.
No one knows which aisle it's on.
Over there.
So it's just so much easier to get someone else to fix it for you. Or just if you get like even something like a flat screen TV, it's just easier to throw it away and buy something new because it's so costly.
Yeah. Okay, we've come to the end of the show. That's all the time we have for today. But we'll quickly run through the stories that we covered. We started off with how AirAsia and Uber are partnering up, so now everybody can ride. Mm-hmm.
Then we moved on to the story about Facebook making a virtual comeback in China with its VR headsets working together with Xiaomi. Then, of course, another VR story about a VR children's book that combines print with self-directed action. Very cool that was.
And then how the plastic microbeads ban has entered force in the UK. It will be coming into law in July.
Yeah, and then we finish off with khaki DIY workshops called Khaki Repair, where you can go and learn how to fix your own electronics and other household items.
Awesome stuff. Right, don't go anywhere though, because coming up after the 1 o'clock news is the Breakfast Grill replay. Audrey, do you want to tell us what it is?
Yes, so the Valiram Group, they were on the grill this morning, so So the company is a homegrown Malaysian success story from its humble beginnings as a family enterprise in like the 1930s. It has morphed into one of Southeast Asia's leading luxury lifestyle and travel specialist retailers. So the guys from The Morning Run, they spoke to Valiram Group's executive director, Sharan Valiram, on the company's overall growth strategy in a competitive retail landscape and the unique challenges in ensuring a thriving family business.
Right, that's it, folks. On behalf of Audrey Raj and Arvind Yuvaraj, my name is Rich Bradbury. I'm going to leave you with Gonna Leave You from Queens of the Stone Age here on BFM 89.9, The Business Station. We'll be back tomorrow, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.